Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Jim McPherson, and today I'll be reading from the March 30th, 2024 edition of The Economist. On the cover, we have a picture of a physician with a stethoscope around the neck and over the shoulders, but where the face would normally be, there's a computer screen. The headline that goes with this, "The AI doctor will see you eventually." That will be the lead story in the leaders section, and we'll get to that shortly. But first, let's delve into politics this week. Gunmen attacked a concert hall near Moscow, killing at least 139 people. It was Russia's deadliest terrorist incident since the Beslan school siege of 2004. An affiliate of Islamic State in Central Asia claimed responsibility. Four of the alleged attackers appeared in court, severely bruised and beaten, to face charges of terrorism. The authorities say the men are from Tajikistan. The American embassy in Moscow had warned of an attack in early March, telling its citizens to avoid large gatherings. Russia ignored the warning. Vladimir Putin and Russian media have instead brazenly tried to link the attack to Ukraine. One television channel aired fake video clips of a Ukrainian official crowing over the incident. Russia intensified its drone and missile assaults on Ukraine, stepping them up shortly before the ISIS attack in Moscow. Kyiv, the capital, was hit and energy infrastructure targeted across the country. Poland scrambled fighter jets when a Russian missile strayed into its airspace. Bulgaria seemed to be heading towards another election, its sixth in 3 years, as the country's political parties failed to agree on a unity government, threatening Bulgaria's attempt to adopt the euro as its currency in early 2025. Far-right and pro-Russian parties are gaining ground. Simon Harris was chosen as the new leader of Fine Gael in Ireland and is set to become the country's prime minister following the resignation of Leo Varadkar. Aged 37, Mr. Harris will be the youngest person to hold the position. The UN Security Council passed a resolution demanding a temporary ceasefire between Israel and Hamas for the remainder of Ramadan, aided by the abstention of America, which had used its veto to block three earlier resolutions calling for a halt to the fighting in Gaza. Angered by America's abstention, Israel canceled a planned visit by a delegation to Washington and said it would not halt operations while Hamas still holds Israeli hostages. Voters in Senegal turned out in large numbers to elect Bassirou Diomaye Faye, the opposition candidate, as president. Macky Sall, the outgoing president, had tried to postpone the election, causing a protracted constitutional crisis. A court in South Africa ruled that a party backed by Jacob Zuma, a former president, can be on the ballot in the general election scheduled for the end of May. The Umkhonto We Swizi party may get more than 10% of the vote, according to recent polls, which could push the ruling African National Congress to around 40%, forcing it to seek a coalition if it wishes to form a government. America, Britain, and New Zealand blamed China for a cyber espionage campaign aimed at a variety of targets, including Britain's Electoral Commission, New Zealand's Parliament, and critics of the Chinese Communist Party. America and Britain placed sanctions on an alleged front company for one group of Chinese hackers. They also placed sanctions on two alleged members of the group, while America brought criminal charges against them and five other men. The High Court in Britain gave Julian Assange more time to fight against his extradition to America to face espionage charges, ruling that the American government had to provide more assurances about the fairness of a trial there, among other things. Mr. Assange leaked a trove of classified information on his WikiLeaks site that the Americans say put lives in danger. The candidate of Venezuela's main opposition coalition was blocked from registering for July's presidential election and missed the deadline. Corina Yoris, an 80-year-old philosopher, had been drafted in at the last minute following the arrest of senior opposition figures. Maria Corina Machado won the opposition primary last year by a landslide, but was prohibited from running by the Supreme Court. America's State Department said that it was tracking legal developments in India after the arrest of Arvind Kejriwal, the chief minister of Delhi and a senior opposition politician. Mr. Kejriwal's arrest comes just weeks before the start of a general election. He was taken into custody for questioning over a corruption case relating to Delhi's alcohol policy, which he says is fabricated. America and Japan are preparing to strengthen their military alliance, the details of which will be announced when Kishida Fumio, Japan's prime minister, visits the White House in April on the 10th. The plan includes a restructuring of the command chain that will smooth defense planning. Meanwhile, the Japanese cabinet sealed a deal to sell fighter jets that are being developed with Britain and Italy to other countries, further eroding Japan's pacifist stance. The lower house of Thailand's parliament voted overwhelmingly to legalize same-sex marriage and equalize rights on inheritance and so on. The bill is a priority for the government. If, as expected, the upper house and the king approve the law, it will come into force by the end of the year, making Thailand the first country in Southeast Asia to legalize gay nuptials. Joe Biden signed a $1.2 trillion package of spending measures into law after Republicans and Democrats yet again reached a last-minute deal to avoid a government shutdown. The legislation should have been passed 6 months ago. Rebellious Republicans in the House of Representatives yet again raised the possibility of ousting the Speaker. The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore collapsed after a container ship collided with one of its support columns. Six workers who were on the bridge died after falling into the water below. The Port of Baltimore, a hub for trade on America's East Coast, will be disrupted for months. An appeal court agreed to Donald Trump's request to pay just a portion of the $454 million penalty awarded against him in a civil fraud trial. The court told Mr. Trump he could post a bond of $175 million while he appeals against the original judgment. Mr. Trump's relief was short-lived, however. Soon after, a judge denied his plea to delay his criminal trial over hush money payments to a porn star. The trial starts on April 15th. Mr. Trump may be able to scrape some cash from the sale of stock in his social media company on the NASDAQ exchange. Truth Social's share price rose by 16% on its first day of trading, making Mr. Trump's stake worth around $4.6 billion. Remaining in the March 30th, 2024 edition of The Economist, let's move on to business this week. The top ranks of Boeing's management were overhauled amid investor unease about safety checks on its airliners. In January, a panel fell from a 737 MAX 9 passenger jet soon after takeoff. Several incidents have been reported since then, including a 777 that lost a landing gear tire when it was taking off. Boeing safety has become a meme on TikTok. Dave Calhoun is to step down as chief executive by the end of the year, and Larry Kellner departs as chairman. The head of the commercial aircraft division has been replaced with immediate effect. America's Justice Department lodged an antitrust lawsuit against Apple, accusing the tech giant of making it harder for customers to switch phones, undermining innovation in apps, and imposing extraordinary costs on developers, businesses, and consumers. The complaint, in effect, attempts to stop Apple locking users into its ecosystem. Apple said the suit, quote, threatens who we are, unquote, as a company and sets, quoting again, a dangerous precedent, empowering government to take a heavy hand in designing people's technology, unquote. The case will take years to wind its way through the courts. Meanwhile, the European Union opened investigations into Alphabet and Apple over competition practices at their app stores and Meta over its use of personal information in advertising. It is the first official scrutiny of tech companies under the EU's new Digital Markets Act. Had the issues been resolved with the companies by, quote, mere discussion, they would have been solved by now, unquote, said the EU's antitrust commissioner. Alibaba abandoned a planned IPO for its logistics division, instead offering to buy out minority shareholders in the business. A year ago, the Chinese tech giant announced its intention to split into six parts, with the potential for each to pursue a stock market listing. But the plan hasn't excited investors. Late last year, Alibaba decided not to spin off its cloud unit and suspended the IPO of its supermarket arm. Reddit's share price held on to most of the gains reaped from its successful flotation on the New York Stock Exchange. The social media platform stock soared by 48% on the first day of trading. The yen fell to a 34-year low against the dollar, triggering warnings from Japanese officials that they might intervene in the currency markets. The Bank of Japan raised interest rates recently for the first time since 2007, which would normally cause the yen to strengthen, but its monetary policy remains comparatively loose. The director of the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office in Washington repeated his warning that America faced a looming crisis on its federal debt, which stood at $26 trillion, or 97% of GDP, at the end of 2023. Philip Swagel raised the possibility that markets could lose confidence in America's ability to repay debt, similar to the situation that the government of Liz Truss faced in Britain in October 2022. Earlier this year, Mr. Swagel said that America had entered a slow spiral of rising debt and concurrent debt payments. Turkey's central bank surprised markets by lifting its main interest rate by 5 percentage points to 50%. The rate was 8.5% a year ago. With inflation nearing 70% on an annual basis, the bank said that it would retain a tight monetary policy until a significant and sustained decline in price rises was observed. The British government is no longer the controlling shareholder in NatWest Group, having reduced its stake to just below the 30% threshold that would define it as such. During the financial crisis of 2008, the government bailed out Royal Bank of Scotland to save it from collapse. In 2020, RBS was renamed NatWest Group, providing retail banking under the RBS and NatWest brands. 16 years after the crisis, the government still doesn't expect NatWest Group to be fully private until 2026. Visa and MasterCard agreed to cap credit card swipe fees in America, ending a two-decade battle with retailers and potentially saving merchants $30 billion over 5 years. The deal also allows retailers to charge customers for using the credit cards at tills while guiding them towards cheaper options. A judge threw out a lawsuit brought by X against the Center for Countering Digital Hate for allegedly conducting a campaign to drive advertisers away from the platform. CCDH published a report purporting to show a rise in hate speech on Twitter, as it then was, which Elon Musk, its owner, described as scaremongering. But in a scathing decision, the judge found that the case had been all about, quote, punishing the defendants for their speech, unquote. And now for the article that inspired the cover of the March 30th, 2024 edition of The Economist, The AI Doctor Will See You Eventually. Better diagnosis, personalized support for patients, faster drug discovery, greater efficiency. Artificial intelligence, AI, is generating excitement and hyperbole everywhere. But in the field of healthcare, it has the potential to be transformational. In Europe, analysts predict that deploying AI could save hundreds of thousands of lives each year. In America, they say it could also save money, shaving $200 billion to $360 billion from overall annual medical spending, now $4.5 trillion a year, or 17% of GDP. From smart stethoscopes and robot surgeons to the analysis of large data sets or the ability to chat to a medical AI with a human face, opportunities abound. There is already evidence that AI systems can enhance diagnostic accuracy and disease tracking, improve the prediction of patients' outcomes, and suggest better treatments. It can also boost efficiency in hospitals and surgeries by taking on tasks such as medical transcription and monitoring patients, and by streamlining administration. It may already be speeding the time it takes for new drugs to reach clinical trials. New tools, including generative AI, could supercharge these abilities. Yet, as our Technology Quarterly this week shows, although AI has been used in healthcare for many years, integration has been slow and the results have often been mediocre. There are good and bad reasons for this. The good reasons are that healthcare demands high evidentiary barriers when introducing new tools to protect patients' safety. The bad reasons involve data regulation and incentives. Overcoming them could hold lessons for AI in other fields. AI systems learn by processing huge volumes of data, something healthcare providers have in abundance. But health data is highly fragmented. Strict rules control its use. Governments recognize that patients want their medical privacy protected. But patients also want better and more personalized care. Each year, roughly 800,000 Americans suffer from poor medical decision-making. Improving accuracy and reducing bias in AI tools requires them to be trained on large data sets that reflect patients' full diversity. Finding secure ways to allow health data to move more freely would help. But it could benefit patients too. They should be given the right to access their own records in a portable digital format. Consumer health firms are already making use of data from wearables with varying success. Portable patients' records would let people make fuller use of their data and take more responsibility for their health. Another problem is managing and regulating these innovations. In many countries, the governance of AI in health, as in other areas, is struggling to keep up with the rapid pace of innovation. Regulatory authorities may be slow to approve new AI tools or may lack capacity and expertise. Governments need to equip regulators to assess new AI tools. They also need to fill regulatory gaps in the surveillance of adverse events and in the continuous monitoring of algorithms to ensure they remain accurate, safe, effective, and transparent. That will be hard. One solution would be for countries to work together to learn from each other and create minimum global standards. A less complex international regulatory system would also help create a market in which small companies can innovate. Poorer countries with less developed health infrastructure have much to gain from introducing new tools, such as an AI-powered portable ultrasound device for obstetrics. Because the alternative to an AI tool is often no treatment at all, they may even be able to leapfrog the entrenched health systems of rich countries, though a lack of data, connectivity, and computing power will get in the way. A final problem involves institutions and incentives. AI promises to cut medical costs by assisting or replacing workers, improving productivity, reducing errors, and flattening or reducing spending, all while improving care. That is desperately needed. The world could lack 10 million healthcare workers by 2030, around 15% of today's workforce. And administration accounted for about 30% of America's excess healthcare costs, compared with other countries, in 2022. Yet saving money using innovation is tricky. Health systems are set up to use it to improve care, not cut costs. New technology may count for as much as half of the annual growth in health spending. Layering on new systems will increase costs and complexity. But redesigning processes to make efficient use of AI is likely to be resisted by patients and medics. Although AI may be able to triage them over the phone or provide routine results, patients may demand to be seen in person. Worse, many health systems, such as America's, are set up to reward the volume of work. They have little reason to adopt technologies that cut the number of visits, tests, or procedures. and even publicly run healthcare systems may lack incentives to adopt technologies that reduce costs rather than improve outcomes, perhaps because saving money may lead to a smaller budget next year. Unless governments can change these incentives so that AI combines better treatment with new efficiencies, innovation will increase costs. Accordingly, governments and health authorities will need to fund schemes dedicated to testing and deploying new AI technologies. Countries including America, Britain, and Canada are pointing the way. Much of the burden for boosting AI in healthcare falls on governments and regulators. However, companies have a part to play too. Insurers have already used AI tools to deny care unfairly. Firms have missold or overstated the abilities of health AI. Algorithms have made mistakes. Firms have a duty to ensure that their products are safe, reliable, and accountable, and that humans, however flawed, remain in control. These obstacles are formidable, but the potential benefits of using AI in healthcare are so vast that the case for overcoming them should be obvious. And if AI can be made to work in medicine, it could provide a prescription for the adoption of the technology in other fields. Let us move on now to the lead story in the United States section of the March 30, 2024 edition of The Economist, the impact of the Baltimore Bridge disaster. The video footage of the collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge was shocking. At around 1:30 a.m. on March 26th, when a container ship rammed into one of its support columns, the central section of the 1.6-mile structure collapsed into the Patapsco River below, sending people and vehicles into the water. Workers repairing potholes were on the bridge at the time. Quote, "Never would you think that you would see the Key Bridge tumble down like that," unquote, Baltimore's mayor Brandon Scott told reporters. Quote, "It looked like something out of an action movie." Maryland's governor declared a state of emergency. 6 people are thought to have drowned. Beyond the human toll, the immediate questions concerned the causes and consequences of the disaster, one of the most significant in America for decades, according to Jerry Hajar, president of the Structural Engineering Institute of the American Society of Civil Engineers, or ASCE. The FBI has said that terrorism was unlikely to have been behind it. The 300-meter-long ship, the Dolly, was headed from Baltimore to Colombo in Sri Lanka when it, quote, "lost propulsion," unquote, according to an unclassified Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency report. The crew reportedly notified officials that a bridge collision was likely. Eyewitnesses say the ship's lights flickered just before impact. Locals heard a loud, thunder-like rumble in the middle of the night. Quote, "The house started shaking," unquote, says Cyrus Gilbert, a resident of Locust Point, directly across the harbor. Investigators will want to know why the Dolly lost control. Nada Sanders of Northeastern University, an expert on the global supply chain, said that the ship had an inspection issue last June. According to Equesis, a shipping database, Chilean authorities gave it a deficiency for propulsion and auxiliary machinery, though no deficiencies were recorded in a follow-up inspection in New York. The bridge could have been structurally sound. A report by the ASCE gave Maryland a B for its bridges and a B- for ports in 2020. Quote, "Bridges are not designed to withstand lateral loads from ships on their columns," unquote, said Masood Hayat Davoudi of the University of Dundee's School of Science and Engineering. Quote, "There is no question that the bridge would collapse due to the impact on the columns," unquote. President Joe Biden promises to foot the bill to get the bridge rebuilt as soon as possible, but the impact on the city is already being felt. The port is closed until further notice, causing ripples beyond the harbor. The port supports over 15,000 direct jobs, and roughly 140,000 jobs are linked to it in some way. Darius Irani of the Regional Economic Studies Institute at Maryland's Towson University says the port closure alone will probably cost roughly $30 million a day in lost activity. The harbor is an important link in America's supply chain. More than 50 ocean carriers make nearly 1,800 annual visits. It is especially important in the automotive world. Its private and public terminals handled nearly 850,000 cars and light trucks in 2023, the most of any American port. It also ranked first in the country in handling farm and construction machinery, as well as imported sugar and gypsum, and ranks second for coal exports. If another port experienced a hiccup because of labor disputes, say, or cyber attacks, the toll on the American economy could be severe. For now, though, the national impact is likely to be limited. Other ports, such as New York, New Jersey, and Virginia, should be able to pick up the slack. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's, a ratings agency, says the national economy will be okay, but Baltimore will suffer. Commuters and lorry drivers will face disruption. Last year, the bridge served 34,000 commercial and passenger vehicles a day, about 15% of the traffic in the area. The harbor has long been a symbol of resilience. In the War of 1812 against the British, the Americans successfully defended Fort McHenry in Baltimore Harbor, an event immortalized by Francis Scott Key in his 19th century poem that became the national anthem. The tragedy will give the city and port time to implement upgrades that would be harder when the port is active. Baltimore may emerge with a better bridge and harbor. And remaining in the United States section, there's this headline, "Both chambers of America's Congress may flip in November." Americans will elect 471 federal officials in November, 435 members of the House of Representatives, 34 senators, a vice president, and a president. These contests are overshadowed by the impending rematch between President Joe Biden and Donald Trump, his predecessor. Cast your eye down the ballot, however, and something exotic is in the offing. At the moment, Washington is divided by the thinnest of margins. Democrats control the Senate by just 2 seats out of 100. Republicans control the House of Representatives by 5 out of 435. After the election, control of both chambers could flip. In the Senate, the seats contested this year are in extremely favorable states for Republicans. In the House, by contrast, Democrats campaigning against the chaos of Republican leadership may wrest back control. A double flip would be quite a feat of political gymnastics. It has never happened before. Senate terms last 6 years, and only one-third are contested every 2 years. The mix this year is unkind to Democrats. Joe Manchin, the West Virginia senator who managed to remain the Democratic representative of his Trump-loving state, is retiring. His seat will almost certainly be filled by a Republican. Of the 7 competitive Senate races this cycle, all are now held by Democrats. 5 are in presidential battleground states, Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. They are winnable by Democrats, but none comfortably. Republican incumbents, meanwhile, look comfortable. The two that Democrats have the slightest chance of upsetting are Ted Cruz of Texas and Rick Scott of Florida, neither of whom represents states that Mr. Biden will be seriously contesting. Overall, then, the maths look troubling for Democrats. And that's all the time we have this week. I've been reading from the March 30th, 2024 edition of The Economist. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.